Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
Nothing new. These cover-ups have happened for thousands and thousands of years.
You're right, there's no proof, but I mean, there's no proof of Jesus or, you know, people go in the restroom until they tell you about it, you know what I mean? I mean, that's just kind of the way I see things.
From the deep recesses of the mind, in the cavernous realms of limitless possibility, through interdimensional multiversal plasmic platforms, broadcasting from a hidden bunker in an undisclosed location somewhere in the Illinois Valley, comes the show too controversial for daytime programming, bringing you the information they don't want you to hear, every Sunday from 10 p.m. to midnight, leaked live to you right here on KXCJLP 105.7 FM in Cave Junction. This is Weird World with Wilden Freeborn.
You are listening to Weird World Radio right here on KXCJLP 105.7 FM Cave Junction. I am your host, Wilden Freeborn.
And I am your co-host, Angela Franklin.
Is it co-host or other host or...
I think we're keeping it co-host. Other host.
With me, as always, is Garth. Weird World! Weird World! Party time! Excellent! Weird World! All right, that was fun.
Yay.
Yeah. I haven't used that intro in a long time. I like that with that little, I believe that's a backing track for karaoke of the Misfits' Skulls, one of my favorite songs of all time, and I found a karaoke track for it. How perfect is that? What a time to be alive, people. What a time to be alive.
Definitely. So... what do we have for this evening?
Well, funny you should ask. We have a lot of good things happening this evening. I think the most notable of which is our guest for this week, Devin Hunter. And if people are curious about who Devin is and want to check it out right now, you can just Google the man, Devin Hunter, witchcraft. You'll find all sorts of lovely things. He has an amazing YouTube blog that he... updates every once in a while with fun little snips. He's going to be, I believe, is Devin teaching this next week at Pantheacon? I didn't see the schedule.
Sure.
We'll find out tonight.
Yes, we will find out.
We did see Devin last year at Pantheacon, and it was fantastic. And I was really, charmed by him. And I'm excited to be bringing him on the show. We both sat in his hedgewalking class, and he was able to maintain the energy with about 160, 175 people or so in the room, and he got every single one of those people engaged from beginning to end, and it didn't skip a beat, didn't lose track. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I think he was one of the highlights of the conference for me.
Yeah, I mean, and that's saying a lot, because there were a lot of really good things about last year's Pantheacon. Christopher Hughes was absolutely fantastic. Jason Mankey's always funny.
Yeah. Orion Foxwood.
I mean, come on, can you really beat Orion Foxwood? Like, if you're looking for the witchcraft equivalent of a Southern Baptist revival preacher, I want to get him a tent, and I want to take him on the road and you know, have him do faith healings and all that fun stuff. Oh, that's where he came from. We're going to have him on the show, too.
Yeah, Devin Hunter, he does a lot of things, a lot of things. So when we get him on the line, we'll have to let him tell us what his main focuses are right now.
Yeah, he's quite busy. He's got multiple schools. We'll be getting to all that in a bit. I'm thinking maybe it's time to go ahead and get to a song so we can get our guest on the line here pretty soon. Is there anything else that you wanted to bring up in the happenings this week? Is there anything? City council meeting on Monday might be good for people to know about,
yeah,
if they're listening.
There is a city council meeting this Monday. So it'd be nice for people who are interested to come on down.
Yeah, there's some concerns about some various subjects are going to be talked about. Farmers market, I think, is on the ballot, on the agenda.
The agenda.
So yeah, come down if you have time or interest in such things. If you don't have interest in such things, you could come over and hang out with me, and we can watch Hellier on YouTube, because I'm really into that documentary series right now.
It's about the Kentucky Goblins.
Well, that's what I thought it was about at first, because that's what the first episode was about, and the first couple episodes kind of talk about that, but it's really much more than that. It goes into this entire complex of occult and paranormal and conspiracy and hauntings and weird hill people.
And it made you scared.
It did. It did. It was, and I, you know, I'm a horror junkie. I love horror movies. I love especially horror documentaries, which is kind of a new genre. Not really, because in the 80s we had Faces of Death. And that was always like, you know, you couldn't even rent that at the video store unless you were 18 and you had to sign a waiver, you know, saying that you're well aware of what you were renting. And yeah, these documentaries coming out now are a little more true to form of what a documentary is. And like the Nightmare, mm-hmm. that one was horrifying.
Yeah.
An absolutely terrifying experience.
That was the one about sleep paralysis. And we talked about that in our previous shows.
Yeah. When Feather called in with his experiences, we talked about that a little bit. But maybe we should do a whole Weird World episode just on sleep paralysis and the lore connected to it from all over the world. We can even maybe try to find somebody who is involved with the documentary The Nightmare and see what we can do. That's what we're going to do. That's what we're going to do for you people out there in the world. We're going to scare the bejesus out of you. Because that's what it did for me. But this documentary was on par with that. I love that feeling of being scared. I love that, you know, I don't know what it is.
I don't know. I didn't read the article. I just read the headline and then just assumed what the article was about. But it said people who experience anxiety on a certain level feel relief watching horror movies because it brings a whole nother type of anxiety.
Yeah, I can see that. It's almost like the distractive principles of like muscle rubs that have things that cause tingling or burning sensation on the skin kind of distracts the nerves in that region from the pain that you're feeling deeper, and that's how it actually relieves pain, is by causing pain. So I could see that. That's a compelling argument, I think. So but why are we talking anymore? These people don't tune in to hear us talk. Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do.
But they also tune in for the great music that we play on this show, and I'm so grateful for it. This next track comes from a group out of Norway named Eldrim. I've played a couple of Espen Winter's YouTube videos before with his permission. And this track was released by the group and on their Bandcamp. And they're going to be releasing their first full-length album this year. And I got to tell you, it's probably the album that I have the most anticipation for. My most anticipated release of 2019 so far is going to be that. And this is Atterganger from Eldrim.
Thank you.
right. That was Eldrim with Utterganger. You can check them out on their Bandcamp if you are interested to find them. It's Eldrim. One of my personal favorites, and I'm very excited for the forthcoming album. I'm also very excited to be bringing on our guest tonight onto the show, who also has a forthcoming project. Tonight, Devin Hunter's joining us. He's the author of The Witch's Book of Power and The Witch's Book of Spirits, both available on Llewellyn's, as well as the new release to be coming soon, The Witch's Book of Mysteries. He's got quite a cool little bio, but I'd rather bring him on. Devin, are you with us?
I am here. How are you doing tonight?
Doing well. I'm having a hard time hearing you, actually. Let me see what I can do about that. Huh.
Can you hear me now?
No, I cannot. So, gosh, I really don't know.
We can kind of hear you.
Are you there now?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. It's really faint. So let me put some music on and we'll see what we can figure out real quick. And I'll give you a call right back, Devin. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Give us 1 second. All right. Well, this is all pre-planned. I'm going to go ahead and get to the next track that I have lined up. This is a 3-part song and Saturnine by Jackie Oates from the Oak and Ash and Thorn Project. Okay, so I think we got some of our technical difficulties sorted out. Devin, are you on the line with us now?
I am here.
You are here.
Hey, you are there.
And when are you here? You're here now. And how soon is that, Devin?
Right now. It's pretty damn soon.
It's pretty soon. Well, I feel a little bit like Ram Dass right now. That's how now it actually is.
Be in the moment, my friend.
That's correct. You are listening in the background to a wonderful throwback to the 90s. Man, Devin, how old are you?
I am 32.
Okay. So you were around in the 90s.
I was. Yes.
You were there.
I was very fond of the 90s. Yes.
Yeah, this was a fantastic film, and when this cover of The Smiths' How Soon Is Now came out, it was mind blowing to hear this song again on the radio. I remember hearing it, I remember how angry all the goth girls were that it was being played on the radio when The Craft came out, but how excited we all were to see The Craft in the theater. And
I remember being called a poser by a group of girls because I was totally jamming to that at over lunch one day. And I was like, but I'm a witch, but I'm a real witch. I'm allowed to listen to it. And I still wasn't. I didn't get any points. I was still the nerdy kid.
Girls are the worst.
They are.
We all try.
Every crush I ever had in high school, I think, was on a goth girl that hated me.
Me too.
Well, Devin, I had a really brief introduction, but why don't you tell us a little bit about who Devin Hunter is and what you're doing right now, then we can get into the nitty gritty of the conversation tonight.
Oh, goodness. Okay. I'm an occult guy, I guess is the good way to put it. And I've studied witchcraft and the occult and mysticism pretty much as long as I can remember. And I'm a professional psychic. That's actually kind of how I got involved in the occult. I've written some books. I've written a whole series now, which is kind of crazy to think about, which is the Witch Power series. And so book three of that comes out in May, which is The Witch's Book of Mysteries. And fourth book will be coming out in January of next year, which is going to be a big one. It's a pictorial spell book. It's a whole formulary. So those are the projects that have been boiling. I have the Black Rose School of Witchcraft, which is kind of an umbrella for basic intro training into what we refer to as traditional craft, which is like a whole thing to get into if you want to get into what makes something like that. And then I've got Sacred Fires, which is really, that's like my, that's the spiritual tradition that I founded, and that's the one that, that's where my spirit really is. That's where my work tends to be, I feel. Was within that system, and I've got a really phenomenal group of people who I get to work with, and so it's just kind of like my opus, so I get to go and work with the Sacred Fire stuff and grow spiritually and then turn around and write cool stuff in books, and hopefully somebody finds it interesting.
Well, what do you do with the other 6 days in the week?
Well, I own a store. That's a good thank you for my partners to be like, hey. I own a store called The Mystic Dream. I'm one of a couple owners, actually, and it's a metaphysical store here in the San Francisco Bay Area. This is our 30th year, so we're celebrating 30 years.
Wow.
It's a big deal. It's kind of hard to think about because I came on way late in the system. I managed the store for about 7 years and then ended up becoming part owner of it, and really looking at it as it's its own person. It's almost as old as I am, and the store has its own personality, and it's got its own spiritual juju, and it's interesting to think of ourselves as the owners as being kind of the current stewards for the store. And
sure.
So with it being 30 years, kind of sitting back and kind of defining that, and like, well, what is this personality, and what's really going on behind the scenes energetically that's kept the store here for 30 years? And so that's been it's a pleasure, to be honest with you. But that's pretty much it. So it's like, I work in the shop or for the shop a lot, and then I have students and I write and I tour a lot. So it's just, that's my time.
You are a sort of a rock star in the witch world at this point as well. With the tour schedule, it's like you're touring and hitting all these different cons all over the place. It's like you got these groupies and everything. It's a pretty awesome thing to see take place, and it's well deserved. I got to say, we saw you speak at Pantheacon last year, and we both took part in your workshop on hedge walking, and I was really quite pleased with the workshop and blown away by your ability to contain that much energy in the room and focus it so well.
Especially when there was over 100 people
easily.
In the room with you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so
yeah,
that's what I wanted to...
It was a pleasure,
yeah. Well, that's what I wanted to talk about was what it is to be a professional witch. Like, we talk about witchcraft a lot on this show. We have people on with from various traditions and initiations and different walks and different paths. Some don't call themselves witch, some do. You know, various different occultists that we have coming through here. But I think that, you know, what you're doing is set aside a bit differently than any of the guests we've had so far for what it is that you're doing.
Yeah. for the good and the bad, I am kind of off doing my own thing. Being a professional witch is it's so weird to even talk about, because, you know, when I was a kid, I knew I wanted to write books, and, you know, I thought that was a crap dream, and I knew that I wanted to help people in some way. Like, that was always a big part of my upbringing, and just that's my personality, and not in that hero complex kind of way, but in, you know, I grew up in very, very poor Appalachia, and we were lucky because we had, like, you know, well, we didn't have dirt floors, and we had central heating and cooling, which was like a really big deal. And so, you know, I knew that I was growing up, as poor as we were, I was still better off than a lot of the people in the area I was raised in. And, you know, 50% of my graduating class ended up either dead or in jail because of meth. And so, like, you know, the environment that, I mean, I grew up in, I had a really loving family, but at the same time, everything else is just hell. And, you know, being told that I wasn't going to be able to get out of that because no one was getting out of that environment. And then I was gay. And so that added, like, this other level of craziness to it. And, you know, being raised in the Midwest as a young gay guy, you're kind of told from, like, day one, you're just going to die of AIDS. Like, that's just the thing. So it's, like, all this negativity and a lot of darkness and just feeling helpless as a young person. And, I mean, it was already bad. Like, no teenager has like, an easy life. Like, let's just be real. You know, like, at least in their mind, everything is crazy and whatnot. But I had some really crazy other things that were going on that I thought I can look back on now and go, normal people don't have to deal with that. Like, that's not a thing most kids have to deal with. But at the time, that was life, and then I had these strange spiritual things that had been happening since I was a kid, where I was I'd find myself having conversations with spirits. And, you know, when I was younger, the words that I had to use were like angel. I didn't know that dead people could talk to you. Like, that just wasn't part of my Pentecostal mother's, you know, approach to life. And so it took me a long time to sculpt the vocabulary. And my father, who just passed away a couple months ago, he was super free range spiritual guy. So anything and everything, and he would talk about it. And I found that he was pagan. And so, you know, I remember being in the car with him and saying, "Hey, Dad, like, does everybody go to heaven? Like, that seems like kind of a waste." And he said, "What do you mean it's a waste? It's a little, like, think of all the energy that it would create to make a soul, and then you live for like 60 years and that's it. Like, that seems like a waste." And so he laughed, and he's like, "Oh, have you heard of reincarnation?" And I'm like, 12-year-old little Devin in a car, and I've never even had a grown up look at me twice, let alone have a serious conversation. And I just remember, like, the world kind of cracked open, because I was getting the sense that there was something else going on. And so that was my life for, you know, as an adolescent. My parents worked all the time, so I ended up with a computer in my room, and the internet raised me, basically. That's kind of a joke I think a lot of millennials have. And so I had access to things, and this isn't me trying to sound like a smart ass or a snotty kid, but I had access to books, and I had access to the online community, and I had access to information that a lot of people weren't able to find until they were much later on in life. And so I was one of those younger people who, just out of sheer curiosity, out of a need to find some answers, I was able to get access to things that, you know, just most people weren't able to get. So by the time and this is a long-winded story, I'm so sorry. by the time I was 16, I was in a really interesting place of, like, okay, it's time to kind of get a game plan and get the hell out of here, because this is it. Like, I nobody thinks they're going to live to be 16, and you turn 16, you go, oh shit, like, I can do stuff. And then 18, you know, same thing, 21. So we hit these kind of milestones, and I was going to be, like, graduating from high school. I had no life skills, and I was totally freaking out. And I found myself with a friend who was much older, because I was also that kid who hung out with older people. And they had this this little booth at a flea market, and nobody was going to it and spending money there because it was in a flea market. like this little pagan store in a flea market. But it was really important to her, and I thought it was an important thing because it was important to her. And so I would go in on the weekends and I would do readings for people. It was just after I kind of figured out, like, oh, okay, there's something here. There's something more than just I get feelings and I know things. Like, I can do something with this. And so
you're doing,
I got my feet wet.
You're doing early, psychic readings, or you're doing tarot, you're doing divinations. What were you doing? What kind of readings?
A little bit of everything. So my main focus has always tended to be on mediumship. So and that's where the witchy stuff really totally comes from for me, at least for me. And you know, spirits and talking to spirits, this is natural to me, as I think you know, craving water is, and it's just because it's such a normal kind of everyday thing. And witchcraft, like, witches were the only ones talking about it. Like, you could go and you could find some information, and there were a couple mediums who had some books out, but everybody was coming from a super, super, super religious place. And I was not about that at all. I had just had a really bad experience. I got kicked out of the church, actually. at the time, I was looking for anything that was religious. And but I found a bunch of witches, and the witches had the answers. So in that, I picked up a whole bunch of different divination skills, because that's kind of what as far as witchcraft goes, that's a big part of it. Divination is a big part of witchcraft. So I think most witches learn two or three different divination systems the first couple of years they start practicing. And so tarot is definitely one of those. And I read stones. So I have people, like, they'll pick out, I have a big bag of stones, and we'll pick stones out. And then based off of what they put in my hand, I can, you know, kind of tell them what's going on. And then just different techniques and different things that kind of accent the mediumship is really more kind of the tools that I work with. But a little bit of everything, you know, to be honest with you. That's the witchcraft training, because witchcraft, you know, you got to do it all.
Sure. And you were saying you're from Appalachia in the Midwest. You're coming from Ohio?
Yes. So I grew up in Brown County, Ohio. Which is kind of, it's like the northernmost tip of Appalachia, is kind of what we think of. You go over, you know, I was 20 minutes away from the swamps, and then right when you get out of the swamps, you're in what becomes the mountain range that is Appalachia.
So I grew up in Dart County, Ohio.
Yeah, so we're talking southern central Ohio, yep.
Yeah, I grew up right there as well, Dart County, Ohio. So I'm quite familiar with the feeling of despair and seeing the go nowhere kind of prevailing attitude that can do that. But I had one of my very first extremely intense spiritual revelations at Serpent Mound.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, as a young kid, it must have been third grade. We went on a field trip to Serpent Mound, and I just blew everything. And I was a Pentecostal kid as well. I miss the potlucks. Uh-huh. I miss the cookies. But yeah,
really good cookies.
Really good cookies. Amazing.
Yeah.
And but yeah, so hearing your story, I was finding a lot of things that were, I could resonate really strongly with in that experience. And that also leads me to understand more when I heard you say one of my favorite things, and I would love to see T-shirts made of this, is "You're a witch, fix it."
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that has to come from that Midwestern, you're going to go nowhere with your life, you know, story that was told to us. And you were like, nope, that's not going to happen that way. And you set things into motion.
Yeah,
and so that's what I want to talk about that. Like, okay, so you start off from a young age realizing that you had this psychic gift, this mediumship, as something that came very naturally to you. Took the time to invest energy and learn about that and craft some skills around it. So as now in your practice, one of the things that I've heard you talk about in some of your videos is almost, I want to say, like a realistic use of witchcraft. You know, if you're going to do a money spell, don't do a money spell and then sit down and watch YouTube for 6 hours. Do a money spell and then do the things in your power to sort of bring that into fruition.
Yeah.
So can you elaborate on that for us?
Yeah, I'd love to talk about it. Yeah, of course. The principle is, it's totally comes straight out of growing up in Appalachia, totally. So one of the big spiritual truths that we work with in my tradition of sacred fires is this, it comes from this conversation I had during meditation. You know, when we say when we pray, we're talking to God, and when we meditate, God's talking to us. And one of the core spiritual influences in my life is a spiritual being who I refer to as Diana, the goddess of witches. And so I was in meditation and talking to her, and I was in this really weird space and had a bunch of horrible life things that had just happened, but no direction. And I said, oh, can you please just fix this for me? Please just fix this for me. I need this to be out of the way so that I can do X, Y, Z. And I had one of the most in your face, like, responses. And it shook me to the, it felt like somebody was in the room just like saying this right to me. She just said, I'm not here to fix your problems. I'm here to teach you how to do it for yourself.
Nice.
And it totally changed everything. And I was like, oh, that's right. Like, that's the game here. Like, you're not the savior. You're the one that teaches us how to save ourselves. Okay. So it was this really interesting kind of conversation I had with, you know, with my God. And I go off, and it turned into this spiritual virtue for us in my tradition of, you know, if you have the ability to do better in life, you have the spiritual obligation to do so. And that isn't to say, like, oh, if you have a handicap, or if you're somebody who's struggling and you do not have the ability to take care of something, that's a totally, totally different thing. What we're saying is, no matter what life has handed you, if you're not doing your best with what life has handed you, you're not fulfilling your spiritual obligation. And that just blew me away. And it doesn't matter if you're Christian, Muslim, Jew, Wiccan, you know, traditional, it doesn't matter. If you're not doing the very best with what you have, then you're not fulfilling your obligation. And to me, as a spiritual person, I couldn't imagine any greater affront to any creative force in you know, the universe, and to God, if you want to call it God, than not living up to your potential. And so, so much of that discussion tends to be in witchcraft that I think there's a lot of escapism, and this has been something that I've struggled with a lot, not just with, you know, people in my own community, but even in myself, especially early on. There's just so much fantasy, you know, there's so much that relies on strange, freaky phenomena, and it almost feels like a lot of people who practice the craft are looking for some sort of phenomenon, like they want to be spooked out, or they want to become kind of despondent with society and pull back, and that's totally fine. And I'm definitely, I go in cycles where I want to be around a bunch of people for 6 months, and then I want, like, 9 months of just leave me the hell alone. My spirits are better. You people are mean. Like, I'm totally that guy. But at the same time, I have to pay my taxes, and I have to run a business. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. So witchcraft for me has come from this need to have some tools to help even the odds. And I think if we were to do a historical study of witchcraft, and we were to take out any of the kind of, we'll say, whitewashing of witchcraft that's happened in the last 50, 60 years, what we'll find is that, you know, witchcraft has always been, there's always been some person who had to go up against the system, whatever system it was, and they had to, like, fight against the system. So it was somebody living their life, and the odds were stacked against them. And so who do you turn to? You turn to, you know, the last ditch effort, which for most people, for a lot of people, it's witchcraft. You know, and if we were to look at, you know, even Christian society, because, you know, most society is Christian. If we were to look at that 200 years ago, and you were to talk about the devil, it was a totally different experience. Like, people saw the devil as, well, the devil was the first spirit on earth. So if, you know, and God's really busy. So, you know, that's why we have to go to a priest, because God is so busy, God can't talk to us. This was, like, the way culture worked. And so, well, if God's too busy, we'll go to the devil, because the devil was here first, which means the devil has dominion over the earth. So a lot of the stuff that we read about, you know, in historical context, it's not creepy. It's just people looking for answers. It's people looking for help. It's people who recognize something, you know, I don't have everything that I need in order to thrive. And so what can I pull from in my environment, in my faith system, you know, et cetera, to make that happen? And so, you know, witchcraft looks different for everybody because we all have different backgrounds. I mean, my father was pagan, but I was also raised Pentecostal. And so I totally, my rituals have to be ecstatic. They have to be, I have to feel energy moving through me. I have to feel energy moving through a room. I can't just read from a book and recite a poem. Like, that's not magic. That's not spirituality to me. Right. And so, you know, what it requires is you get up and you do stuff. Like, whether you're looking at an ecstatic ritual or you're looking at just, you know, doing a spell to get that job. Okay, well, so if you do cast a spell to get a job and, you know, money's the end of the game, that spell can, you know, we often say energy follows the path of least resistance. And so if you're getting, if you have a block to getting that job, what you would rely on magic to do is kind of clear the path. You know, help get things out of the way, or maybe, you know, pull something a little closer to you or push something away that you wouldn't want, so that your odds of getting that job are much higher. And the more juju you put into it, the more stuff you do, the greater those odds become. And so to me, magic and or witchcraft specifically is all about using a set of tools, which, you know, that's a whole complex thing to talk about, but using a set of tools to kind of level the playing field so that the, you know, the rest of us can have a chance.
Yeah, it's not as if the systems that you're talking about that somebody has to go up against, whether it's government or, you know, mass society, the media, your teachers at school, peer pressure, whatever the systems are, it's not as if they aren't using very similar toolbox that goes back a very long way of a
exactly.
Sorcery, a type of sorcery of mind control and of energetic vampirism and all of these different levels of sort of psychic assault that we face on a daily basis. These tools are being used against you already. So why limit your scope and what you can use?
In my third book, you're hitting on a point that I have to totally, like, yes, let's highlight this. In the third book, which wraps up the whole series, I write about this very thing, what you're talking about. And we talk about, like, social egregores and the idea that you live in a world where everybody is kind of checked into a certain rule book. And so whether you adhere to that rule book or not, or you believe that it's a good thing or not, you're still having to swim through this, like this field that was created by the rule book. And so if you want to play the game, or if you want to win at least, you know, you have to understand the rule book that these other people are playing by, and then you have to choose how you're going to allow those rules to infiltrate the way you're playing the game. And this is a really, really important thing, and especially when we talk about mindfulness, when we start talking about achieving your goals and what it really takes to get from A to Z and those things, understanding that you live in a world that is completely affected and impacted by all of these other things created by society, created by us as individuals. One of the things I write about is women, especially with, like, love magic. Like, this is, there's so much love magic that is designed for women that, and you know, people are, why? Well, the reason why that is because women have had to deal with the crap end of the system with living in a patriarchal society where, you know, if you don't get married by a certain age, you're a burden. If you don't have enough kids, you're this. If you, you know, so women have had it totally different than men do. So, of course, there's going to be a lot more success. Or there's going to be a lot more love spells and things written for women. It's not that it's women's magic. It's just that women needed that more, and those things were written about more in that kind of context. So as times change, we have to kind of evolve with that.
Yeah, I study folklore, and that's one of the things. Recently, I was doing a little talk on yarrow, and, you know, all of the love divination charms and spells are all, you know, geared towards women finding out mm-hmm. things. Yeah.
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 Because it was big. I mean, you had to know, you know, you wanted to know if you were going to have to marry Bobby because, you know, Bobby or Jim, because those were the only two available bachelors in a 100-mile radius. And
yeah.
So, and who you married was going to be a big deal, right? How they treated you, how they, what their family was like, all of that stuff.
Yeah, what your social status was going to be.
Your happiness, your survival.
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah, so with the third book, then you're wrapping up a trilogy. Is there is there plans to extend that into a quadrilogy, or is this going to be a completion of a cycle and you're going to move on to a new project? What's that looking like for you?
I think this is it. So I didn't. It's funny because it wasn't supposed to be a series. It was going to be a series, and then Llewellyn had said, "Well," and so I said, "Okay." And we approached it, the first two as kind of two separate-ish books. But then as the third one was coming out, and, you know, we were kind of following that title niche that we had carved out with the Witches book of, you know, .. It became really clear that, at least for me, from a writer's perspective, that I didn't want to have to go over things that I'd already written about. And the progression of the material that I end up getting into is really, really heavy. It hasn't been written about yet, and so at least not in this kind of a way. It hasn't been available in this type of way before. Usually, it's the stuff that you have to go to like really expensive grimoires and find overseas and get. I mean, crazy stuff that I'm privileged enough to have copies of some of these really cool, trippy texts and things, but. They've been, you know, glamorified and glorified in this kind of way within the witchcraft culture and within culture that it's made them almost an inaccessible. And there's some really, really cool stuff in some of these tomes, you know, just about how to relate, how you as an individual relate to God, like that, the remove religious context from it and what is God, you know, that really heavy stuff that's mind, like. It'll change you as a person if you get to go and explore these things. And so for me as an occultist, because I was having these just incredible experiences going and doing some of this work, I was like, well, how do I not write about this stuff? How do I not share this trippy stuff that I get to play with these people who have been so dedicated to the first two books? Wanting to take their witch, because, you know, I wrote the books not for beginners. I wrote the books for people who had already been practicing for a while and had kind of gotten bored and were looking for a way to kind of amp up their personal practice, amp up what they were doing, and hopefully bridge the gaps that are created with a lot of the, you know, kind of traditional fundamental kind of witchcraft training. Because there's a lot of things that are kind of removed. Like, as much as we talk about being psychic and psychic practices within witchcraft, it's not really a thing that's talked a lot about, because a lot of witchcraft teachers weren't psychics. And so it's like, you know, if that's not a thing you're into, if that's not a thing that you're good at, you're not going to teach it, you're not going to carry it on. But we know historically that there was a major emphasis that was placed on mediumship and witchcraft studies and trainings, you know, historically and things like that. Where did all that go? You know, and so with the books, I tried to inject some of those things that naturally felt like they were missing to me. They just should be there. Like, well, they should be here. We know from all the stories that those things were happening, but no one ever talks about it. You know, the most you got was like, you know, oh, work with this herb and make an unguent and rub it on yourself, and you may have an experience. You know, some of those kind of things. And I'm like, well, that's not really quite what I'm looking for. And so... the books became this way for me to explore those things on a really personal level for myself, and then process that in text, you know, for other people. And then I wanted to be able to provide a system that people could pick up and instantly start working with, that would hopefully inspire them to continue their studies with the occult and continue their studies. You know, basically exploring themselves, because that's what I see the occult as, is a set of principles and practices and traditions that are really there for self-exploration and self-improvement, essentially, at the end of the day. You know, I think a lot of the stuff people don't know about the occult is that it's like the first self-help groups really were occultists, like, getting together. It wasn't just about, I mean, yes, let's explore and find some cool stuff, but these people were getting together because they wanted to create impact, you know, in their lives, and they wanted to do some stuff. So there's this rich history of it. Why not explore that? And that's what I try to do at least a modern way in my books. So I think this is it. I think the third one's it. They're each fat, so, you know, they're not exactly the quickest reads. And I know that I, at the end of this one, I was in a, like, just psychically, mentally, spiritually in a place of just, like, I'm done. Like, I don't know what else I could pour out into this. There's, I try really hard to be original with my material. So, you know, if I'm borrowing from somebody or I'm inspired from somebody, I'll let you know, like, hey, this is where this comes from. But otherwise, like, you know, the Witch's Book of Spirits has, like, 34 spirits that I channeled that have never been written about before. It's just that it was me and my ritual room doing that work and, you know, working with spirits and writing it down and talking about, you know, oh, you can work with the spirit for this thing, the spirit for that, channeling the sigils, channeling the, you know, the vessels and the things that ended up having to be built to make sure that those spirits were happy. You know, those things never been done before, and so it's not old material. And it's, and again, I'm not trying to be cocky. I'm just trying to speak to the work in itself as a modality of teaching people how to do this for themselves. My whole end game is always about teaching people to do this stuff for themselves. So yeah, I channeled these spirits, but if you read the book, it shows you how to do it for yourself. Like, right. It's all there. You just have to sit down and do it. And it's like that with the third book, but the third book tends to be it's bigger stuff. It has to do with the soul. It has to do with your progression as an entity, as a spirit, and what happens when you're stuck in this physical body and you know that you're part of a very psychic world, a very spiritual world, and you have to navigate that. And, you know, not just from a deeply spiritual place, but from a superficial place as well. Like, how do you get through your day to day and still be a grounded, awoke, you know, kind of person who is aware that the spirits that you're working with on a day to day basis manifest in multiple ways. And knowing that and knowing how to navigate those things can make or break your practice, especially when we get into the deeper aspects of witchcraft.
I love it. I love that there is an emphasis on the scholarship as well as a really pushing people to create their own
experience.
Yeah, like it's an experiential. It's not really just about getting the information, but it's also not about working without the information. I love right. that you're tying this all together. It reminds me of Andy always says, follow not in the footpaths of the old, but seek what the old ones sought. You know, mm-hmm. he's basically saying, like, don't do the same thing that they've always done. You know, when you get a lot of people, I see this. There's, you said talked about escapism, and I see that in both the scholarly academic aspect of some of Western witchcraft, and I see that in the very kind of superficial plastic paganism of modern witchcraft as well. There's two different levels of escapism. One is the purist, who is like, this is the way it's done because this is the way they do it, and you know, you can't introduce new things, you can't give colored water to the spirits or whatever it is, you know, like. And then the right. other side of it is like, if it's not fun, then I'm not going to do it. And I think that Western witchcraft right now seems to be at this turning point where it's wildly popular. I think it's probably the most popular it's been since The Craft came out, I would guess.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
we hear witch identity being used a lot. We see a lot of products being sold to sort of feed your identity, but we don't see a lot of depth. There's some certain blogs that are out there that don't really go deep into these subjects and really get into the work that goes into it. And I think that you're talking about the work, you know, like these are the tools. This is the function that you can fulfill, but the work is going to be yours. You're going to have to do this work.
Yep.
Yeah. So
without question.
Yeah. So even if I were to come to you and say, hi, Devin. I need a witch. I need you to do this for me. Your answer to that would be no.
Well, it kind of depends. So, one of the weird things about being a professional witch is that I come from a place where I believe wholeheartedly that witchcraft can be done by anybody. You don't need a special like thing inside of you to do it. You just need to like to do it and have the urge to do it. You can do it, and that is because witchcraft is formulas and it's You know, there's definitely that component to it, at least, is where you can pick up a book and you can read the spell and you can do it. Okay, you did a spell. You don't have to be, you know, anything special to do that. But the flip side of that, though, is that especially here in America, we have this beautiful tradition of that quite working differently, where people would go and they would hire somebody who they believed had a, you know, at least often it was like spiritual doctors, or you'd say witch doctor, or you know, depending on what part of the nation you were in, you'd have a different word for it, and really depending on what part of the world. But you always had these people who could do, who knew things you didn't know, and so they knew how to put things together in a certain way, ingredients and so and whatnot, in a certain way that took that pressure off of you, so that you could kind of have an almost automatic experience. So you could go and you could buy a special condition oil for love, and then you know that was made by a witch, and you put that on, and the idea being that that oil then is going to help attract a mate or a partner, so on and so forth. And so, you know, yes, you can go and make that oil yourself, but you can also go and buy somebody else's thing who has made it. And what I found is that people really do want the love oil that I make, or that, you know, a store makes. And, you know, and pretty much every metaphysical store out there has their own love oil, their own psychic oil, their own, you know, protection oil, so on and so forth. And, you know, the reason why is it's just like anything else. You know, are you going to make your own cologne, or are you going to go buy a cologne that you know is tested and is good? Are you going to buy a radio just because it looks cool, or are you going to do a little bit of research and get the radio from the best company that isn't going to wear out? You know, so it's the same kind of idea that you want craftsmanship. You want people who know what they're doing to make those things. I know how to do all this stuff, and I still go and buy stuff from, you know, different people. There's a great person in Oregon, Rosarian Blends. You know, go check them
Catamara.
Out. The oils that, the oils that Catamara makes are phenomenal. And I think of myself as like a pretty damn good oil blender. And I still, like, I'm going to see her. I'm going to stock up on my Ayahuasca oil. That is going to happen, you know. And so, because I know she knows what she's doing, she's good at what she's doing. And yes, I could make my own Eye of Horus oil in theory, but it's not going to be like hers, because she knows what she's doing. That is her magic. That is her craft. That's what she blended and created. And so there's something powerful to that. So there, you know, and from that sense, no, I'm not going to cast a spell for you, but I will totally hook you up with the ingredients and the things to do it for yourself.
Sure, that's I consider those things.
I used to do magic for hire.
Those things are like the crafts, the tools that. Yeah, absolutely. I use Catamara's oils. I use Marcus's work. I mean, these are crafts made by craftspeople that have really honed their skills. Absolutely. But yeah, I don't expect Catamara to do the work for me, just because I bought the oil that she produces. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, totally. Yeah, it's
The work is still going to be there, whether I put the oil on or not.
Yeah, you still got to do it.
Yeah,
you still have to put the oil on, and you still have to go and you know, date. Like, that still has to happen. Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah, you can't put perfume on a poop and expect people to love it.
That's true. But, you know, there is a history of you going and hiring a conjure doctor, or you hiring a witch doctor, or just a witch to do XYZ. And to me, you know, at this stage in my life, when I have a client come in and sit down and they've booked an hour with me, it doesn't matter what comes across the threshold in that hour. I could be doing mediumship. I could be sitting there with that person, helping them, you know, meditate, or walking them through a ritual or spell themselves. Sometimes it's just me going, you know what, I'm going to take care of this for you. You know, there have been times where people come in and they have a court case, or there's something going on, and there are a million other things going on at the same time, and they just can't handle it. And I'm like, you know what, I feel like I can help relieve some of this burden for you. So I'm going to take care of this thing. I'm going to light a candle for you, or I'm going to set a light for you, or I'm going to do ritual work for you to help take care of those things. So you can do it for somebody else. I'm just trying to get a little, I guess I'm being too technical maybe, but you can do things for other people. But I think if you're a witch, you should do it. You know, like if this is your thing, then learn how to do it. You know, if you were studying martial arts, you know, you're going to study martial arts, you're going to learn it, and you're not just going to have somebody who's a black belt come in and fight all your, you know, fight all your battles for you. So,
I think that would be awesome.
If you're saying you're a witch and you're a magic practitioner, you need to go learn these things absolutely. You have to do it for yourself.
I gotta say, Devin, I would hire a black belt ass kicker to hang out with me and just kick people's butts for me if I could. That would be awesome. That'd be cooler than having a witch on retainer.
I don't think so.
Speak for yourself.
I would rather.
No, I can do witchcraft, but I can't do kung fu.
That's true.
Well, you're still young enough to learn, though, man.
Oh, that is true. That's true. But I'm not gonna. But I will study deeper into the craft.
Yep.
We're gonna have to take a quick identification break, but I wanted to talk about kind of the Western view versus what we see in witchcraft in other regions of the world. What you're talking about is very common practice in most of the world. Mm-hmm. When you talk about South Asia, East Asia, Africa, go to the Crescents and in the Syrian regions, Persia, all through that region, South America, Central America, you see professional witches. That's a standard in the cultures, especially mm-hmm. in underdeveloped countries. And you know, with the developed first world, I don't like the term first and third world, but the industrial developed countries, we see something a bit different. And I think that part of that is possibly related to the knowledge that this is real and this works. And if they can delegitimize it as a business, then people won't be able to use these workings quite as well, which is why it's sort of gone by the wayside. It exists in our culture in this country in certain regions. You go down into Louisiana, you go into the hills of the Ozarks or Appalachia, you'll find it to be quite present in very mm-hmm. small pockets.
Mm-hmm.
But so you're bringing this in on the West Coast out here. There's a few people doing what you're doing. It's you're not the only one fighting this battle, but it is an interesting juxtaposition that I'm seeing in the way that the unscholarly witchcraft view of the world kind of tends to apply traditional British witchcraft or Wicca practices to the entirety of witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas that's not the case. And the work that you're talking about, I mean, even in, you know, parts of Europe, Estonia, all these areas, these witches that are predominantly women are feared and revered, and they have positions of power in their community.
And I'll add, most of them are Catholic.
Sure, especially
so
in Europe.
But that, and you know, I'm just saying, you got to add that. So it totally looks different in every single culture. Witchcraft, you cannot. There is no universal like thing that says this is witchcraft, other than we tend to look at, I kind of refer to it as like active animism. It's you know, we're able to go push things and put things together and kind of tie certain energy strings together. But realistically speaking, a witch can be anybody and everybody. And those things exist. And every, you know, the Western culture, we've got a really screwed up, schizophrenic view of not just spirituality, but I mean death and all kinds of things. And I think all of that plays out when you start talking about witches. You get to see the strange relationships that we have in Western culture, especially Anglo-Saxon Western culture, that just totally reinforced, I think, a lot of really horrible things spiritually, the distance we have between ourselves and the earth and each other and God. You know, all of the stuff that Western culture tends to promote, you don't necessarily see in Eastern culture. And so, you know, things like animism are much more embraced in Eastern culture than they are here in Western culture. And the animism is like a fundamental principle in witchcraft. And so you have those things where the community is and society, they're just more ample, or there's more ample opportunity, rather, for people who fall in line with kind of being a witch and being, you know, filling that niche. I think in some ways it's easier to kind of step into that because you have a society that already venerates so much of those aspects. You know, and it's not always the case because, you know, people are, you know, being killed in Africa right now, these children and women, and, you know, because they're being accused of witchcraft, and you've got all kinds of horrible things happening. But on the flip side of that, you also have, you know, what's happening here in like the Americas, where you have this huge growth of people who are referring to themselves as witches and who are looking for a different type of spiritual approach. And so, you know, for us here in the West, we tend to think of witchcraft as being kind of spells and magic and that get your hands dirty stuff, but also goddess worship and, you know, kind of that sort of vein of things. And it just doesn't look like that elsewhere in the world. Like, and it almost to the point where it's like we're so privileged with all of our technology and all of our communication and how easy our lives are, even though most of us work our butts off all the time. We're so privileged to be able to have a spirituality that is about exploring ourselves in relationship to some ancient deity. Whereas, you know, in other parts of the world, it's more about how do I survive for the next month when the fields are plighted and the things are happening. So, you know, that relationship to magic and those things still very real because those people still very much so need that. We're in Western culture where we're told we don't need those things. And so to go explore them is almost exotic. And that just isn't the case elsewhere.
Yeah, Corinne Boyer a couple weeks ago said something that was really fascinating. She said, the reason they don't fear you here is because they don't believe in you.
Yeah.
And yeah, I thought that was pretty fantastic. Summed it up quite well. We're going to take a quick break, Devin, with a song and some station identification, pay some bills. We'll be right back. I want to talk more about the relationship to the self and how that plays into the magic so strongly and how, you know, how that works for you, as well as you touched upon really briefly our relationship to death. And I want to tie those two things together, the relationship to the self and the relationship to death in our culture, and how doing some basic practices like learning to walk the hedge, how that can sort of bridge that those disparities in our culture. Are you up for that?
I'm excited. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. So first, I want to let people know you are listening to KXCJLP 105.7 FM Cave Junction, which is brought to you by the Spiral Living Center, a 501c3 nonprofit educational organization whose purpose is to enhance self-sufficient community in the Illinois Valley. For more information, check out www.spiralliving.org. Yeah, we love Spiral Living Center and all that they help bring to this valley. It's quite an amazing group.
Definitely. And for those of you who would like the best audio way of listening in right now, you can listen in at www.kxcj.org.
Unless you got a radio.
Stream.
If you got that old-fashioned radio
that,
in your house.
Yes, and it's not crackly.
Yeah, don't sit in your car tonight freezing your butt off just to listen to Weird World Radio. Go inside, get on your phone or your tablet or your computer and check us out there. You can also be viewing the live video stream on the Weird World Radio Facebook group right now. That's me snapping my fingers on the radio as if you'd see that. But you won't see that because you're just listening. Okay, so actually, you know what? Quick story. We got to hang out the other night with one of my absolute heroes in the world of music. Frankie Gavin from Dedannan is on tour in the States right now on the West Coast, and he played at a winery in Ashland. We went to see him, and then we got to play music together for hours and hours afterwards. We sat and we sessioned, and we joked, and we laughed. And it was just such a joy. But it really ties into the conversation tonight and where this is going to go, because I feel like an important aspect of any craft that we have is the tradition and the lineage. And if you can tie that red velvet rope from you through the masters that came before you, if you can get that lineage and understand the passing down of the traditions, that's something that I've always been steadfast in my belief that is what creates and maintains these crafts as being conversations with God. Whether you're a poet or a musician or a magician or a witch or a baker, a cook, whatever it is, if you can trace your lineage and learn your initiation from those masters that came before in some form, you're going to find your whole conversation to be enriched. And that's how it felt sitting next to Frankie playing music. So I wanted to play some Dedannan with old Frankie Gavin sitting in on this session here. So we're going to play a track from Song for Ireland. We're going to play The Arrival of the Queen of Sheba in Galway. You're listening to Weird World Radio right here on KXCJLP 105.7 FM. Ringo McDonough there on the Bow Run. Such a fantastic collection of musicians Dedanen has been for 50 years now. Those guys have been playing tunes together. Alec Finn on bouzouki, who died this last year. Frankie Gavin on whistles and flutes and fiddles and vocals. And, wow, just fantastic stuff. And he's a heck of a guy, and don't let anybody tell you otherwise. They might try. All right, so we are back here with our guest. Devin, are you still on the line with us?
I'm here.
We have mastered technology tonight here at Weird World Radio, people. We figured out the phones and the soundboard. This is good. You must have put some kind of technology spell on us here, Devin.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So... as we were leaving before the break, we were touching on you. Well, we've gone through a lot of stuff, but I kind of want to get deeper into some of it, especially the aspect of the relationship to the self and how that really plays such an important role in good magic. If you really want your magic to work, how important that is, and then how we can talk about that with death, because you brought that into the relationship that this culture has to death. We seem to be an escapist culture, and we're escaping even that. What are your thoughts on this, Devin? Like, what do you see as the relationship to ourselves and our fear of death, and how does magic and witchcraft and the sorceress practices come into play?
Well, that's a big one. So, you know, I guess the Reader's Digest version, it would be that, you know, first and foremost, I have to say that as people, we are surrounded by not just psychic, you know, influences. I mean, if you're walking in the grocery store and you walk next to, you know, somebody who's having a hard time and suddenly you realize you're getting frustrated, you know, if you have those types of experiences or you're driving in your car and you can feel your sister need your help, you know, that kind of stuff, if you can believe in those things, then I think a rational person should be able to go, what else is going on? And what else might be possible? You know, I like to use the term preternatural, which is a term that essentially just describes things that are often referred to as supernatural, but instead of it being supernatural, which means, you know, there is no explanation for it, preternatural means there is an explanation for it, we just haven't discovered it yet. So science will one day be able to go, okay, this is what's going on, we're just not in that place. And I firmly believe that all psychic phenomena and all of those things will be totally kind of scienced out at some point. And you know, we know just from studies and things that have happened already and some experiments that, you know, Yale did and Harvard has done, we know that, you know, there's already a vein of science that's looking into this stuff and that it's just so weird and there's already all these other things to look at. So we know that, you know, there's a there. We just don't know what it is. And so I think if you're a rational person and you can say, okay, I've had experiences and I know there's some sort of, again, preternatural thing happening, then I think the logical next step is to go try to figure out what it is. And that's, you know, if I have a client who's always having like some, you know, a hearing, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning, a knock on the wall, you know, whether their friends believe it or not, for them, they're having this knock at 4 o'clock in the morning. So we have to go figure out what that is. And I think that if we can take that same rational desire and we can put it across the board in everything that we do spiritually, we can say, A, maybe I don't understand this myself, but maybe there are answers and I owe it to myself to go figure out what they are. And B, as a rational person, I can approach the unrational and try to figure out, you know, A, what's happening, but B, you know, what's the balance that I require before I hit my oh shit meter or my bullshit meter. And so for me, I think what's really important is that we take this look at everything and we say, hey, there could be something going on. You know, for me, a big question I ask all of my students is at the end of the day, when you're in your deathbed and you're looking back on your life and you have a moment of, oh, you have clarity and you go, none of this is real. All of this spirituality stuff is all fake. I've just been, you know, lying to myself and trying to convince myself of something. And I know now that when I die, I'm just going to close my eyes and nothing's going to be on the other side. If you're in that place, then how are you going to feel about the life that you lived? And to me, this is a really big thing because I do end up encountering death so much in my life and in one way or the other. And I've had this kind of question pop up before. And so for me, the answer is I would be totally happy because all of the things that I've invested in spiritually have all helped me become a better person, just as a person, you know, as a human being. I'm a better human being because I've done these things. I've explored myself. I have seen myself as a challenge that needs to be not just explored, but empowered and refined. You know, I have all this potential and you do too. And if we're not living a life that is encouraging that potential, then what are we doing? And I think that is double when we think of spirituality and we think of the exploration of the self. And this is where occultism comes in, because occultism is so much about the exploration of the self, just as much as we have what we kind of, you know, refer to as like low magic or, you know, kind of that crafty part of the making of spells and oils and potions and things like that. There's this other part of witchcraft that really becomes important the more you do those crafty things. You start to realize that there is a much bigger thing happening behind the scenes and you're a part of it. And so, you know, how can you put together herbal ingredients for a spell? And, you know, theoretically, your mind knows, okay, this peppermint is going to help with clarity and this tonka bean is going to help with love. Well, in your mind, you know that, but what spiritually gives you governance over that? Like, if you haven't experienced that, if you don't know what the energy is there, if you haven't had firsthand one-on-one exchange with it, then how are you going to actually use that in a spell? You're just throwing herbs in a bucket and catching them on fire. Like, it's just an herb. And so everything is just a thing until you say it's something else. You are just a person until you say you're something else. I was just a redneck until I said I was something else. You know, and so I think for me, it all kind of circles back to this of like, well, who are you, and what do you want to be, and are you living that life that you want to be living? And I think that we in Western culture have a major support system that's missing for this, and that is ancestors. And what I mean by this is, so here's our talking about the dead in Western culture, and this has been a lot of meditation, and people may or may not agree with me on this, but we have a colonizing mindset in our culture. You know, it was all about leaving the motherland, going to another country, and setting up shop, planting your flag. And when we did this, you know, starting even before the Crusades, but, you know, definitely this was a big deal during the Crusades, we as a culture were raising children to send off to war, and we were never going to see them again. Like, you didn't know if your son or your husband was going off to the Crusades. You were basically saying, I'm never going to see this person again. If we look at, the rest of colonizing culture, you look at what the Brits did, going all over to China and India and taking over. We were sending our kids off, and we just didn't know. And so it was much easier to have some totality and some finality there than it is to believe that A, they could come back, or B, they could still somehow play a part in our lives. And this is really seen when we look at traditional Aztec Mayan culture. You know, in traditional Mexican culture, they would dig up the dead. And in some parts of Peru, they'd bury, they'd parade the dead around, through the streets. And it's this veneration of the dead. It's saying, this person is still part of my life. This person is still, they care about me. And we don't really have that. And so for us, we get up, we go struggle through our day, and it's so much about us living our lives and doing what we want to do and proving that we can be the best and blah, 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 blah. But in other cultures, it works so differently. It is that you are accompanied by your ancestors. You are the most recent incarnation of all of their hard work. And so they're invested in you. You don't just have your kid, relying on you. You also have your grandparents and your grandparents' grandparents who all believe that you are capable of achieving whatever you want to achieve, right? And we just don't have that. So we have this really strange schizophrenic kind of relationship with that, to the point where it builds up let's just call it what it is. It's the veil. It builds the veil. And so we talk about, oh, the veil is thinning at Samhain, and the veil is thinning at Beltane, and there's all of these things that we have said, oh, there's this phenomenon that happens that allows us to be able to communicate with spirits more. It's you. You've created that. That doesn't exist. Like, as a medium, I can guarantee you, you're surrounded by all kinds of spirits right now. We all are. And it's just a matter of, is the veil up or not? And in witchcraft and in occultism, because we do so much of this exploration of the self and its relationship to the world around us and whatnot, that the veil gets thinner and thinner and thinner just because we're poking at it. Basically, we're challenging the idea of the veil. Are these spirits here? If the spirits are here, then the energies must be here. If I can feel the energy from a crystal, then there must be energy coming or that's capable of coming from anything, right? And so we take all of those fundamental things that we're kind of introduced to when we start practicing the occult, and later on, they really become kind of truths. The idea of animism, that becomes a spiritual truth. In order for you to be able to do any effective spell work, you have to have the spiritual value and virtue of animism. And there's a reason for that, and that's because you're saying that you acknowledge there's an indwelling energy, there's an indwelling spirit that exists in all things. And as witches, we're going and tapping these spirits and saying, hey, I need this thing, I need that thing, and so on and so forth. We can take that to the next degree and start talking about conscious energies, where we're talking about dead people, and we're talking about, even angels and demons and fairies and all of those interesting cryptids and, all of that stuff. Those things are very much so part of the spiritual atmosphere. Whether we are actively working with them or not, they're there, And the other thing to that, too, is what is called a fairy in one part of the world would be called something very different in another part of the world. And so, you know, if we really were to break out the almanac, what we'd find is there are these incredible overlapping experiences that we as human beings have with the spirit world. And in cultures where the veil isn't promoted, they have a much more natural experience with spirits. And so, you know, so let's look at, like parts of Africa, for example. So we go to Africa and we're looking around, we find that a lot of those people don't necessarily have access to all of the things that we have access to keep our mind off of, you know, living a life. You know, they don't have phones and TV and computers and all of these things. So their environment, their day-to-day is much more built on the cycles, just the natural cycles of life. So if the sun's up, I'm going to go out and do things. It's nighttime, I better go inside because there's dangerous things outside, right? And so very, very different relationship. They're not stuck on a screen the whole time. And because of that, they're going to be more aware of their surroundings. They're going to be more aware of what's happening in the room with them, right? And so we've all had that moment where we're like ironing, we're all alone, we're like ironing, and we can feel somebody else in the room with us, or we feel like we're being stared at, and we're like, oh, and it takes us out of our skin. That is something, that experience is something that we look for, especially when we're training psychics. You say, oh, no, you want that thing to happen, and you want it to kind of wash over you. And that way, you know, you've made contact. But we only have to go through this extreme thing to make that happen, because in our culture, we're not given that experience on a daily basis.
Exactly.
You know, in other cultures, it's there on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of this work, it can come off as sounding like self-help, kind of, you know, like I'm okay, you're okay, getting in touch with yourself and your inner child and all mm-hmm. that. But it's really foundational work that we wouldn't have to do if we had an intact culture, and if we had a healthy society with a lineage that's tracing back. I mean, you look at indigenous cultures here in the States, you know, intact indigenous cultures still have a maintenance of traditional life ways. And mm-hmm. they have the stories of all of their ancestors going back quite a long ways. It's an amazing privilege to be able to sit and experience that level of understanding of where you come from and who you are. It's mostly been foreign to me until I started doing this work. You know, the meditations mm-hmm. and the various rituals that one can do to open up that conversation. And that's really, I think, what we're talking about here is just having the experience of knowing that something else is happening, and then getting the toolbox to engage that experience in conversation.
Exactly.
And that is the next logical step, like you were saying before. But if we don't, if we don't have that as a foundation of the work that we're doing, we're really missing out on a large portion of our allies and our power. Really, that's what it comes down to. It comes down to our power. We've either given away our power or had it taken away for so long in this culture that's what we know. We know powerlessness, but as we learn about ourselves through these practices, we start to gain power. So
exactly.
What is a witch's power, Devin?
Oh, that's a tricky one. You know, I wrote about this in the first book, and I immediately went on tour after it came out, and I found myself on a panel, and I had to defend kind of the opposite statement of what I had made in my book, which is that the witch power, the thing I call the witch power, of course, if I had a copy, I would read the pretty definition for it, but essentially the idea of the witch power is the instinctive drive and urge to find and participate with preternatural forces. That's how I kind of define the witch power. And I was brought up in the occult believing that you had to get initiated in order to possess the witch power. And I just don't believe that's true whatsoever. And the reason why is because I'm a medium. And so I was going out and having kind of initiatic experiences with spirits way before I found a witchcraft teacher. And I still to this day think the most precious spiritual information I've been given and the most precious magic I've been given was directly from a spirit that had nothing to do with any lineage that I had trained in. So I have multiple initiations, and most recently I just was initiated into the fairy tradition of witchcraft. And in all of this, you know, I went and studied all these things because I was looking for validation. I knew I was a witch. I knew I was magical. I knew I could do all these things. But I the community I was in was very much you needed initiation in order to be taken seriously. And so I went and I looked for it. And what I can say were the most valuable parts of all of the training, it was never the stuff that people were fighting over with the initiations. To me, it was always like, the most valuable stuff was listening to my high priestess talk about how she balanced her checkbook and how she learned to let go of things versus to hold on to them and what that would do to you. Like, none of that was spiritual secrets. That was just wisdom passed on from somebody who had lived life already and had more experiences than I had. So as I, you know, as I look back now and I, you know, I'm here I am and I have my own tradition and I'm teaching in other traditions, and I'm looking back and I'm like, well, what was really the good stuff? Like, you know, even me, I was raised thinking my father was a gypsy, like, and we found that wasn't true. As he was dying, we found out, oh, it's actually not true at all. And so there are all these interesting things about, like, who I thought I was lineage-wise, and, you know, we'll say bloodlines and all of that kind of stuff, genetically thinking, that's the word, which is not true. And so, as I've gotten older, I've found that all of the stories my family had that, like, we were supposedly had a Native American princess and my mother's side and all, is all lies. It's
of just, course, you know, you it, did
folklore, right, that families have. Yeah, everybody's got a Native American grandma, especially in the Midwest,
right?
And so,
especially in Ohio.
You know, as I look back on all of that and I look back on what the witch power is, especially now that I've written 3 books about it, it's something that I do think exists, and I do think it's special. I do not think that everybody can be a witch, and that isn't because you don't have the ability to practice witchcraft. I think what I'm talking about is that urge instinctively to go and commune with and to participate in the preternatural. For me, I can't avoid that. Like, it's in me. In the same way that I get sexually aroused, I get magically aroused or psychically aroused. So I want to go, and I want to go talk to things and play with spirits. And, you know, even if I was a doctor, I would still be doing this on the weekend. Like, this is just who I am. And so there's a thing inside of me that I think was always there that has nothing to do with any lineage or has nothing to do with any sort of practice. But I will say, as I've studied and as I've grown in my knowledge of occultism, there has been a continual discussion. I think this is an important thing for all spiritual anybody. If, you know, as a spiritual person who is a seeker, you are in a continual conversation with yourself about who you are, what you're doing, how all this fits in your life. And what I found is in my training, I more was given the tools to have that discussion versus any magical secret that made things better or that gave me a big secret into, you know, this hidden mystery stuff. Like, none of that was given to me by another person. So for me, the most valuable thing that I can take from any of my lineage training was actually from my fairy training. And it was one of the founders of the tradition, Victor Anderson. He was kind of a mad scientist, and he had studied all kinds of things, but, you know, his main thing is fairy, and he very much had created the system in which the energetic vessel for fairy, and he was all about being a mad scientist. Like, he was about experimenting and exploring different techniques and blending things together, and that normally, like, would never go together. Like, he was this incredible chef who was just mixing spiritual things together to figure out what worked and what stuck, and he very much so afforded to us, as people who are kind of downline from him, and as what I believe to be one of the spiritual values of fairy, is this idea of, you have to be a mad scientist here. Like, if you're going to be doing this work and you're going to be playing this game here, you have to be experimenting and figuring out what works for you, because there is no one size fits all with spirituality. It does not happen. And Victor knew this well. And so for me, I can say, like, the witch power was definitely informed and influenced by the witch power of other people who've come before me. But my witch power is my witch power, and it belongs to no God, it belongs to no spirit, it belongs to me. It is a extension of my soul. And I think that at the end of the day, you can be a Pentecostal and still have, you know, some sort of spiritual influence or some sort of spiritual, you know, power, and you're going to go study certain myths and certain things to help influence that and to help highlight that and bring that out. I was raised with spiritual healers, and that was just a big part of just kind of the faith. And here I am as a witch, and I'm like, well, I'm a spiritual healer. I do that work too. I just do it differently, right? But it's still, you know, essentially we're still all doing the same thing, you know, at the end of the day. So I think the witch power is it's something that is, because every witch is different, I think the witch power is different for every witch, you know, and I think that we can be brought into a system, but I also think it's something that we can go and seek out ourselves.
What's really funny to me right now is, as you're talking about the witch power being different for each witch, I just took notice that there's a Captain Planet poster in the studio.
I've never noticed that before.
All of the kids holding their rings and creating Captain Planet, you know, that they all have their own powers.
With all the different colors, this kind of seems familiar, Devin.
Yeah.
There you go.
There it is.
There you go.
Everything I need to know about witchcraft, I learned from Captain Planet.
Yep. Well, you're not the only one, buddy, let me tell you.
Well, what you were saying just now, it really made sense to me to think about. I get into a little bit of a row sometimes with people because I am one of the people who practices witchcraft but does not reject Christianity outright. Having been raised Pentecostal, I spent a lot of time with atheism and trying to deny the existence of a God because I was angry about it, but I've learned over the years that it really is just another language in a set. It's a foundational grimoire of a particular practice, and that's really what it comes down to. It doesn't have to be held as anything that has a power over us if we choose not to let it have power over us. We can enter into the power with it if we'd like. I think Orion Foxwood really blends that really well, and he's also obviously from the fairy tradition and also coming from spiritual healing from the Christian perspective as a child as well. So I think that's really I think that's something maybe we're going to see more of in American witchcraft as we see Christianity kind of falling away a little bit from being the dominant force in spiritual expression. I mean, you know, 30, 40 years ago, that was really one of your main options. Everybody that I knew went to church growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing that shift now. And we're seeing things like Pantheon is now, like, what, the largest gathering of pagans in the U.S. of its kind? You know, like, that's getting bigger and bigger every year. And now there's a bit of controversy about who actually owns Pathios.com and who's and what articles are being promoted on there. I don't know if you're familiar with any of this stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of what I'm seeing as traditionally been pitted against each other as battling or as what's the word I'm looking for? Like these, like a dichotomy of practices. Really, when you get deeper and deeper into understanding this, there is no dichotomy in any of this. It's all tools that can all be used or not at your leisure. Like, you can cast away anything that doesn't serve you. Why would you continue to do it? And if there's something that would serve you, why are you not participating? And that got me thinking about the way that I see, you know, when you get on a lot of these social media groups with people who have a shared interest of the occult, oftentimes I'll see people complaining incessantly in their posts about their station in life. And like what you were saying, if you're, you know, you're a witch, fix it. I'm wondering if these people have not been taught that you're casting spells by doing this. Like, you know, when you maintain a story of yourself and you push that story, you're casting that spell over your life. And that's not to say that if you are having a really hard go about it and there are a lot of things really bad happening to you, that that's somehow your fault. But I'm wondering about what can happen if we, as a culture in the witchcraft community, started making that sort of the forefront of what we're doing, is that that healing the relationship to the self and the way that we move forward in our communities and what we engender in one another, how that could shift American witchcraft on the world scale. What shift that could bring?
Yeah, no, you're talking about some really big stuff here, and that's awesome. I think, honestly, that it has to do with the maturity of the overall community. And that isn't to say, that isn't me saying, like, we don't have mature people, but if you were to think of American witchcraft or American paganism as it stands now as, like, a glass of wine or a bottle of wine, the older it gets, the more mature it's going to get. You know, you're going to have things surface that it would never have surfaced otherwise, and you're going to have things that are here in the beginning that won't be there in the end, you know, flavors and certain things. And I know that, you know, there's never going to be an overarching umbrella that organization or any of that kind of stuff that's going to exist within paganism. It just isn't going to happen. We're kind of, it's ingrained in us kind of fundamentally that we don't do that. Hopefully we don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And most of us share in that, like, oh, no, we're good doing our own thing. But I think what we do see is, like, the work is maturing. So, you know, when Scott Cunningham was writing books, it was exotic to write about spells and herbs and crystal magic. And, like, that was a rare thing that didn't exist. You didn't see it. If you did see it, it was, like, these weird texts. And so he did a lot to kind of bring... and his generation of authors and spiritual teachers did a lot to bring things to modern witchcraft that didn't really exist before. Like, you're not going to look at witchcraft in the 1940s, or at least European witchcraft in the 1940s, and see, like, Campbell color correspondences. Like, they didn't exist. We took that from black culture. We inserted that into Western occultism. So now everybody knows red is for love, but that just didn't, that wasn't a thing 50, 60 years ago.
Right.
Same thing with a lot of the herbal correspondences. Like, there's recipes in his books that were totally taken from indigenous groups and were totally taken from African-American groups here in America. And it was just because that's where the information was. So it wasn't, you know, so I don't think he thought of himself as, like, stealing any information or any of that kind of stuff. It was just, this is what you were talking about, because people back then were just happy to be another practitioner. It didn't matter, you know. These wars and this, you're doing it wrong, just didn't really exist back then, not in the same way, because there was this freedom that was there. It wasn't until we kind of got a little institutionalized, we started writing books that were more available to people, where people started to feel they had an ownership over the material. You know, everybody reads Cunningham's herb magic book and thinks they're a master herb magic person, and that's just because that was the information that was available. It wasn't until you had, like, Anne Mora come out with her Green Witchcraft series that, like, herb magic really took this intense depth, you know, kind of turn. And it's just this idea that, like, okay, you're going to find people who are going to dive into this, they're going to find something new, and they're going to bring a new thing out of that older material. And so we're going to keep finding that witchcraft and occultism is just going to keep growing. The work is just going to keep maturing. And I think a part of what my generation requires of witchcraft in order to keep it alive is that we go deeper. And what I mean by that is, you know, as a millennial, I can look around, and it's so funny, I used to hate being referred to as a millennial, and now I keep bringing it up. I keep pointing people, I'm a millennial. But as a millennial, you know, I think we're all looking around and we're like, okay, well, we can accept that this is allegory. We, you know, we're looking at religion or spiritual. We can accept allegory. We can accept mysticism. We can accept the idea of blind faith and so on and so forth. But how is it helping me pay my bill? How is it helping me live my life and deal with my crappy ex-husband and my kids that are always, you know, sick? And how does this actually help me? And so there's this shift that's happening where it just isn't good enough that witchcraft is different, and it isn't good enough anymore that witchcraft is kind of has an exotic thing to it. People are coming to witchcraft for this reason they've always come to witchcraft, which is they're looking for answers or looking for a way through, you know, a certain area of life, or they have an interest there that is not satiated elsewhere. And they're staying in witchcraft because they're finding real things that are here to help them develop as people. You know, it, same reason I stayed in witchcraft. I was finding things that helped me develop as a human being and pay my bill, you know, at the end of the day. You know, it wasn't just because I was doing readings, but, you know, I was a bartender and a server, and I had to do, you know, things to help me make sure I was going to pay my rent and I could do enough tips and so on and so forth. And then I have clients that are witches in Hollywood that are actors, and you would never know, you know, that they do the work that they do and that they're witches, but they are, you know, and they're doing work to get the gigs and to get the jobs. And so it's like we have this idea, because in the public persona, which you see are like the authors and to the podcasters and the bloggers, and people are taking their work very literally. But like I meet all these authors all the time, and we're sitting down having conversations, and I'll say something, oh, you wrote about this thing in your book and it's really complicated, can you explain this to me, and how do you do this in a group setting? And they'll say, oh no, we don't do that, that's just what we wrote, because that's how we were able to take this thing that we do and actually make it make sense for somebody outside of the group. And so, you know, what we're seeing in face value is not necessarily how it's working on the inside, you know. And I can tell you as an author, there are things that I have to write about. And I'm like, well, how do I explain this to people when it's just something I do? Then I have to back up and create a practice and a procedure for it. And it's like the most unnatural thing in the world to do. But you have to do it, because how are you going to share this with somebody? So, I think the work is evolving. I think the requirements that members of witchcraft community and a culture have, in order for them to have a long-term relationship with it, have changed, and those have matured as well. And I think it's the people who are now with radio shows and who have podcasts and video casts, who have tackled, you know, kind of an old new media, and are bringing a new generation of people this information. You know, before I had to go through horrible, horrible archival websites and, you know, to find a spell that I thought was an ancient spell, but it turns out it was just some guy in Michigan, you know, writing it in his mom's basement. And, you know, but I didn't know that. You know, we've done all this work. We filtered that out. We know where the good stuff is. And so the kids nowadays can come right to YouTube and look up how to do a crystal cleansing. I didn't see that stuff. Right. I had to go to a crystal lady. It's 2.5 hours away to learn how to do that. You know, and so it's just, everything's different now. The way that we learn is different. The way that we're able to communicate is different. And I think it's forcing us to evolve into something. The question is, what are we choosing to evolve into? Because I think we totally get to pick, well, but it's up to us.
This brings in the question.
I think you see more and more communities stepping back and kind of creating their own thing instead of participating in the Uber community.
But what I do see happening, and I think it begs a really good question of how then do we acknowledge that we have this burgeoning community, and at the same time with that comes a responsibility. We have a lot of people coming seeking information, and there's a lot of crap information out there. You know, that we know this. If you go to any occult section, you know, in any major chain store, you go to Barnes and Noble, you go to a lot of crystal shops and you know, these small stores, a lot of the books on witchcraft is not necessarily the most well researched and not necessarily the most the best information that people are getting on the surface. So how do we do that as a community? And I don't think we have time to get into that on the show tonight. We're in our last few minutes here, but just something that I ponder is, how can we, without creating dogma, be protective of the community and have these vetting? How do we vet in this community at this point? Because there is
have high standards for yourself and for the people you hang out with. I know for me, just because somebody says they can teach me something doesn't mean that they can. I cannot tell you how many times I've had somebody come to me and say, oh, I can be your teacher, or, oh, I can teach you this thing. And I'm just like, that's like the grossest thing to hear out of somebody's mouth to me.
Right.
If I'm interested in what you do, I will come to you. Like that's always my thing. And if somebody's interested in what I do, I want them to come to me. I'm not going to go to the, you know, So I and it just comes from having high standards. Like I have a ridiculously high standard with everything from how my students and I interact to how I write a book. You know, I mean, there's just everything has a standard, and you have to be able to say, like, I think ethics are totally relative, and I think we tend to get very stuck on ethics, and we tend to get very stuck on the right way to do something, so on and so forth. There is no right way to do anything. There just isn't. You know, there are millions of ways to do everything.
And there's a lot of wrong ways.
For somebody and it gets them to where they need to go, by all means, that's fantastic. That's great. So, you know, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, what matters is, are you happy with yourself? Are you able to sleep with yourself at the end of the day? Are you able to say that you're tackling, you know, everyday things in society that are going to help society and help culture? Are you tackling racism? Are you tackling homophobia? Are you doing, you know, those things actually make the world a better place. And I think that there are so many more things to worry about than if you're casting the spell the right way. Are you even casting the spell to begin with? I mean, so many people, let's just start there. You know, and so I think it's about raising a standard, and it's about, you know, kind of recognizing that the fantastical elements that we find in paganism, especially in the beginning of paganism, are there because they're sparkly and they're pretty, and it's the thing that I think a lot of people need because it distinguishes this path as being something different from other paths. And so it's okay to have that there. But like I write about in this third book that's coming out in May, there's a line that you have to cross with this where you say, I'm going to take this stuff and actually put it to use, you know, and the people who are putting it to use, you're going to see just like a mile away because they're successful. They are in whatever field they're in, whatever they're tackling, they have success there. For them, they're able to achieve, you know, that next level for themselves, and they're pushing themselves in a healthy way. You know, again, I'm not trying to sound like an ableist by any means, but if you have the ability to do better, you have the obligation to do it. And I think there's more of that. There's more of that need. There's more of that awareness that is developing within paganism and within witchcraft than we've ever seen before. I mean, even just like my friend Jason Minkey just wrote a book, Transformative Witchcraft, and it's taking Wicca, like Wicca, and it's like pulling out these gems. Like, I trained in Wicca for years, and I didn't get half of the stuff that he wrote about in this book. You know, it's these beautiful gems of how to take this material that people think they know and how to apply it in a different way to actually get some sort of empowerment. And that's a big deal. And so when you see witchcraft authors shifting it from, you know, the formulary model where we want to know what herb to mix with what herb to make X, Y, Z happen, when we shift the attention away from, you know, those, from recipes to, you know, recipes for success and recipes for empowerment, then you get a spirituality that can last. You get something that is going to be more than just people coming for a weekend because they're feeling witchy because they watched a movie. You're going to get more than just the housewife who is lonely and feeling depressed. You're going to get more than just the gay boy who's, you know, lost in life. You're going to get something beautiful that is going to last for an entire lifetime and that will cue you into much bigger things. But it all comes from having a high standard for yourself. Don't believe it just because it's in print. You know, don't believe it just because it's available to you. What does it feel like? Did you research your teacher? You know, all of those things we can do now and we can question, whereas before we just didn't know to or we didn't have the ability to.
Right.
So I think there's just a maturity that's happening, and that all comes from just higher standards.
Well, great.
Well, I got to say, having high standards ourselves, Angela and I, we really appreciate the work that you're doing and the time that we got to spend with you at Pantheon. Are you going to be there this year?
Yep, I will be there. We'll have the store and we'll have the big suite.
All right. Well, we will not be there, but some of our dear friends will be there, and we'll be sending our energy along with them.
Yes.
We do have a traditional last question.
Sure.
Yes, we would like to know what books are on your bedside.
Right now, I am reading Man's Search for Meaning, and I can't remember who wrote that for some reason because it's not right in front of me. And I am totally into the Bessem, Stang, and Sword right now from Christopher Pello and Charlotte McGuire.
It's
so
good.
It's on our bedside also.
I'm rereading it and finding all this good stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot. I'm really enjoying that book as well.
Well, sweet. Well, Devin, what would be the best means for people to look you up on the internet and to maybe, you know, become a student of yours?
Yeah, so you can just go to devinhunter.net and you'll find everything. And on all the social media, I am at Mr. Devin Hunter, and that's Devin with an I.
All right. Well, thanks so much again, Devin, and I look forward to meeting you again in person and working together in the future. It's been a lovely couple of hours, and I think we touched on a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. You guys have a wonderful week.
You too. Take care. All right, so that was Devin Hunter. What a fun time. That 2 hours went very quick.
It did.
I feel like we could probably do another 2 hours pretty easily. We need to get Devin in on one of the witches' roundtables. If we can get Devin and Katamara and Marcus McCoy and Corinne and Orion and Aiden Wachter and George and Frank and Anwen, and if we could get everybody we know in on one round table.
I don't think they'd be able to fit in the studio.
That would be a really big round table.
Yes.
That would be huge. Yeah, I really appreciate the perspective that Devin's coming from. What I really liked about him is I think I forgot this in the year that since we've seen him, is just how direct he is and to the point. He's not fluffy, and he doesn't pull any punches. He says exactly where he wants to be and does it. He's very direct. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a valuable lesson in communication, especially when we're talking about a lot of these things that are very wishy-washy. A lot of books that you'll find on these subjects in the occult, especially modern witchcraft books, are very wishy-washy. Like, well, you could do this if you want, but you don't have to. If you don't like it, then, you know, that's okay. Maybe this will work. Maybe this won't. You know, and there's not a lot of strength that gets passed through in some of this stuff. And that's why I am pretty selective about, you know, I'll read the first few pages of a book, but it has to draw me in. And I think Devin is one of those people that has that ability to really draw you in and tell you exactly what he's learned and what he's trying to convey. And I think that's important.
Yeah.
And he doesn't seem to be too concerned whether you like him or not. He's just doing what he's doing, and he's successful. That's pretty cool to see, I gotta say. We don't have a lot of people we can show that are able to support themselves. You got people like Rosarian Blends and House of Orpheus, and the Mystic Dream is one of those few examples of people who have been able to really do the work and craft their lives in a way that makes this work. Speaking of making it work, how do we make this work here at KXCJLP 105.7 FM Cave Junction?
Well, we're broadcasting with the help of Redwood Service Center, home to TC Computers, Ivy Guns and Ammo, and CaveNut Internet Services. Redwood Center Service, Redwood Service Center, offers copy and print assistance, computer repair, and UPS shipping. They're open Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday from 9:30 to 5:30, and Wednesday from noon to 5:30. And they are closed Saturday and Sunday.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in this week, everyone. If you want to keep tuning in to KXCJ, you're going to hear so many awesome shows throughout the week around here, one of which is on Monday afternoons from 2 to 5 p.m. You can hear some pretty awesome jazz. It's mostly the blue cool jazz from the 50s to the 70s. But it gets a little crazy sometimes, so tune in to the Jazz Expansion with Sam right here on 105.7 FM Mondays from 2 to 5 p.m. I love catching that show. There's some good stuff, man. You don't get to hear Sonny Rollins or, you know, I mean, Coltrane. A lot of the stuff that he plays you don't get to hear on the radio, really, unless you're listening to KXCJ.
Yeah, we have so many good live, you know, shows and DJs.
We certainly do, and more coming in the future.
More and more.
Yeah, so keep tuning in right here to Community Radio, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. I'm going to leave you with a new track. This is the first track off of the album The Invisible Comes to Us by Anna and Elizabeth. these two ladies are just simply amazing at not just carrying on a tradition of Appalachian music, but carrying on the tradition of the Appalachian spirit.
Yeah, performance.
Yeah, and making the songs relevant. They aren't just reenactors who are singing these songs. They're singing these songs because they're still relevant. These stories are still relevant, and they're doing it in their own way, which is beautiful and informed, and I love it.
Yeah. So we will see you guys, you all, next week.
All right, stay weird.
I'm going far away, far away from poor Jeanette. There's no one left to love me now, and you too may forget. But my heart, it will be with you wherever you may go. Can you look me in the face and say the same, Jeanette? Fine.